Hello, hello. This is the Angry GM, and we're doing another proofread aloud. Today, we're proofreading aloud the sequel to the last thing I proofread aloud, which was the five best and worst things about D&D 3.5. Today, we're doing the five best and worst things about 5e. So, without further ado, the five best and five worst things in D&D 5e, according to Angry. And distressingly enough, I did come up with a much better title, but it was after I had already written, recorded, and published the previous article, and I should have just called this the best and worst of D&D 5e, and the last one should have been the best and worst of D&D 3e. But what can you do? Anyway, the five best and five worst things in D&D 5e, according to Angry. Nothing's all good and nothing's all bad. Not even people. Not even you. As a great dog man once said, you can't divide the world into good people and Death Eaters, Harry. It's not that simple. And it's not. When you break everything down into all the way good and all the way bad, it makes you stupid. I don't mean doing so sounds stupid. I don't mean doing so is stupid. I mean it literally makes your brain work less good. Dividing the world into the purely good and the purely bad wrecks your brain. Every time I trash talk D&D 5e, or compliment it, and every time I praise D&D 3e, or slag on it, fanboys and haters and apologists and edition warriors scream about how my criticism is unfair and my praise doesn't count and how my opinions are wrong and stupid and how I'm stupid. And that's notwithstanding that we're talking about effing games here. Bits of entertainment. They're not objectively good or objectively bad. They're things you either enjoy or you don't. You can try to analyze the reasons why you personally enjoy them or don't, and you'll usually get it wrong, but that still doesn't make anything good or bad. Any idiot can praise what they enjoy. Anyone can piss on what they don't enjoy. Hell, it's fun to praise the stuff you like and piss on the stuff you don't. It feels good. It's basically like taking a hit of crack cocaine right to the medial prefrontal cortex. It's a lot harder to praise the things you don't enjoy and to criticize the things you do. It's also healthier for your brain. And that's really why I'm writing these two lists. In my last article, the five best and worst things in D&D 3.5 according to Angry, I claim to always offer something useful and meaningful in return for tearing shit down. Well, I've slipped on that rule a little in the past 18 months, but I still believe in the rule, and I still personally force myself to take an even-handed look at everything, to find the good in the bad and the bad in the good. See, this isn't opinionated clickbait bullshit I wrote purely for fun. It's got a lesson to teach. Now on to the opinionated clickbait bullshit. More of the good, the bad, and the angry. I assume you already know what to expect. This is the second time in as many weeks I'm publishing a bullshit clickbait list. And my reasons for doing so haven't changed. Go back and read last week's list if you don't know what's going on. Speaking of shit that hasn't changed, the same rules apply to this week's comment section as last week's. If you want to add your own bests and worsts, fine. But you've got to add them in pairs. One good and one bad. If you praise with no critique or critique with no praise, I'm deleting your comment and calling you a fanboy or a hater. And if you haven't substantially played or run the game, Dungeons & Dragons 5e, you don't know jack shit about it. Don't go repeating stuff you read in forums or spew assumptions based on your half-assed, sour-faced skim of the rules. No hearsay, no assumptions. The five best things in Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition. Why did I say dragons? Dungeons and Dragons. Okay. The five best things in Dungeons and Dragons 5th edition. So what, in Angry's correct opinion, are the five best things about D&D 5e? I'm so glad I rhetorically asked on your behalf. Let's play a game. Approachability. Last week, I made fun of D&D version 3.5's character sheet for turning off new players. By contrast, the 5th edition of the world's greatest game, how fucking full of yourself do you have to be to make that your game's tagline, by the way? By contrast, 5e is very disarming and inviting. It isn't the most approachable edition of D&D ever, but it definitely takes second place. And that ain't just down to the character sheet. Character creation's about simple choices and well-defined archetypes. Pick a race, pick a class, pick a background, maybe pick a signature style, and you're done. Newbies can grok that easily. Moreover, as I recently mentioned, the rulebooks use natural language and address the player directly, or the GM, and that makes them really easy to read. RPG rulebooks are reference manuals, when they're supposed to be, but that usually leads to this awful third-person passive voice presentation. You know what the difference is between this? When you attack a monster, roll an attack roll and compare your result to the target's armor class. And this? When one creature attack... Oh, wait. I used the wrong voices for the wrong things. Not that this matters to the proofread aloud, or to the proof, but, you know, I'm not giving you the best read aloud experience I could be giving you here, so let's try that again. You know what the difference is between this, when you attack a monster, roll an attack roll, and compare your result to the target's armor class, and this, when one creature attacks another, the attacker rolls an attack roll and compares the result to the target's armor class. One isn't an exhausting effing chore to read for 300 pages. There's a reason I speak directly to you, my reader, in my writing, and that's it right there. The point is, D&D 5e does a really good job of selling itself to newbies. The missing piece of the puzzle, backgrounds. For a game about jumping headlong into an imaginary fantasy world, D&D has always struggled to provide connections between the player characters and the world. Whatever else your character is, they're an adventurer first, which is more of a game role than a world one, and it's the sort of thing that has no backstory. In fantasy stories, adventurers are those guys and gals who show up in town one day and deal with the town's problems. Yes, some classes do imply world roles or backstories. Clerics, for instance, are members of the priestly caste, and wizards were all apprenticed to mad old wizards on the edges of towns. But that was the beginning and the end of any sort of in-game support for world roles and backstories. And that worked back in the day. But given the modern focus on world and story, that shit doesn't fly anymore. It worked back in the day, but given that, yeah, okay, let's rewrite that slightly. It worked back in the day, but given the modern focus on world and story, that shit doesn't fly anymore. Backgrounds, little chunks of half-flavor, half-world lore supplements to class and race, filled that niche really well. While I could heavily criticize their implementation in 5e, I'm not going to. I'm not going to for the same reason I let the first seasons of Farscape and Star Trek The Next Generation off the hook. Backgrounds are a new thing, and the first try is always a little rocky. If WotC iterates the design properly in D-Box 1, and they probably will, backgrounds are probably going to become a character generation genre staple. One bonus to rule them all, advantage and disadvantage. If you want to impress all your GMing friends with your brilliance, you'll bark out the phrase bounded accuracy and clap like a trained seal whenever someone offers you a fish. Because bounded accuracy sounds smart and the 5e designers said it that one time. Me? I ain't as impressed. Bounded accuracy was only necessary in one little corner of the game, and it actually created more problems than it solved there. But I'll get to that. But you know what is an impressive piece of design? Of course you do, the heading gave it away. The advantage-disadvantage mechanic is actually a really elegant and graceful bit of design. The mechanic provides impactful modifiers. Why is it telling me impactful is misspelled? Okay, so apparently it just doesn't know the word impactful as a word. The mechanic provides impactful modifiers with an excellent table feel, but which don't change the range of possible outcomes. With advantage, your odds of success increase drastically. Way more drastically than you might think. Check out this mathy video from Stand Up Maths if you're immune to boredom and want to know more. But you still can't roll more than you could have without advantage. The relationship between your total modifier, ability modifier plus proficiency bonus or whatever, and the difficulty class of the check doesn't change. But people suck at probability, so none of that mathy shit matters. What matters is how advantage and disadvantage feel at the table. Rolling two dice and taking the higher, or being forced to take the lower, feels way better, or way worse, than rolling one die and adding, or subtracting, an extra number. Moreover, the play dynamic creates all these interesting little emotional outcomes. If you have advantage and roll two ones, that's an effing gut punch, for example. And if you roll a 1 and a 17, it feels like advantage saved your ass from disaster, even if, statistically, there's no way to know whether you've gotten the 1 or the 17 if you just rolled one die. If you want to sound smart, you can call this effect an increase in play dynamic depth or some shit like that. Now, bark for your codfish, clap, good seal. Sometimes a wading pool is deep enough. Monster design. When I was complimenting D&D 3E's super customizable DIY bestiary, I made this snarky remark about D&D 5E's monster design being all about push-button special abilities. And given I involuntarily sneer whenever I say the words 5E and push-button in the same sentence, you probably think I'm really down on 5E's monster design. But en contraire, mein frère, I actually think monster design's the perfect place to focus on simple, straightforward spell-like abilities instead of open-ended action resolution. Let me explain this push-button thing. Push-button ability is my term for a specific and very limited action you can take in an RPG. The ability's got a name, a mechanical effect, and it can't do anything that it can't do. Spells in D&D are almost all push-button abilities. Press the firebolt button on your character sheet and deal 1d10 fire damage to a target within 120 feet, and maybe set it on fire. By contrast, you can do a lot with a strength check. You can bust down a door, win an arm wrestling contest, lift the lid off a stone sarcophagus, anything really. That's open-ended action resolution. Push-button abilities are great for monsters. Why? Because most monsters aren't on screen very long, and very few of them put in repeat appearances. If the party encounters a hellhound, they'll probably encounter one once for 3 rounds, and then never again. And most monsters only exist to provide tactical challenges. Combat's gotta be fast and exciting. That means GMs have to grok what a monster's about and make tactical choices quickly. They can't hold up the game. And because the monster's only in the spotlight for a few rounds, every action the monster takes has to showcase what's unique about the monster. Unique tactically and unique flavorfully. The point is, the GM has 4 rounds tops to show the players what any given monster is all about, to provide the players the information they need to fight that monster tactically, and to make that monster feel cool and unique. Push-button abilities are the way to go. And while it's true that it was really D&D 4E that invented this approach to monster design, 5E polished the hell out of it. And 5E also added back just enough open-endedness to let GMs break out of push-button play when the situation demanded it. 5E hits a great balance between 3E's open-ended monsters as characters approach and 4E's push-button monsters as game mobs design. I do wish there were good customization tools, because 5E's ideas about monster customization boil down to just reskin the thing or tear it down and rebuild it from scratch. You're dying, save ends. The death and dying rules. That's actually a 4E joke now that I come to think about it. Anyway, ask me about that in the questions or comments if you want to. There was an ongoing online joke called, if you are reduced to 0 hit points, you die, save ends. Okay, you're dying, save ends. Death and dying rules. Remember when I crapped all over 3E's schizophrenic death and dying mechanics? Well, guess what? 5E got them right. I love 5E's death and dying mechanic. I love it so much, I can't really think of anything to say about it. It just feels like the perfect way to handle death and dying in a fantasy adventure role-playing game. Hell, I can't really think of a way to improve it. Okay, that's not quite true. One tweak I'd make is to spell out explicitly that the GM should roll death saves behind the screen and keep them secret. that the players should have no idea who's alive or dead until someone tries to revive an unconscious lump of PC. Not even the player playing the dying lump. No, and I'd like a nice, solid kill shot rule. If you're adjacent to a dying creature, you can use a weapon attack to kill them dead. No roll needed. Anyway, kudos to you, 5e, for handling PC death so well that I can't think of a way to make it better. Dishonorable mention. Awful art direction. I'm cheating again, but it's my list and I'm allowed to cheat. Honestly, I feel bad for including this because this is totally just about personal preference. I mean, everything on these lists is subjective, but at least I have insight and analysis for everything else. This is just... I hate the art in 5e, especially in the core rulebooks. I mean, I can't speak for the art in the latest Bigby's Bag of Bullshit supplement or whatever because I ain't buying D&D 5e books anymore, but I'd probably hate it if I saw it. I hate the bland, muted colors. I hate the fact that nothing stands out. There's nothing iconic or memorable in anything. I remember the gorgeous full-page pieces from AD&D 2E, like Amira Call the Chaotic and the blonde cleric lady healing the bleeding warrior in the snow. I remember the iconic characters from D&D 3E and D&D 3.75, I mean Pathfinder. I remember all the illustrations of all the monsters and the gods, or I remember all the illustrations of all the armor and the gods' icons in D&D 4E and the breathtaking planar landscapes all over. But all I remember from 5e is that one weird encephalitic halfling bard, and I only remember him in my nightmares. One thing I hate is that D&D 5e focus heavily on characters. Bland, generic, adventuring every people. Almost all the art in the core books focuses on dudes and dudettes. There are very few images of the fantasy world to be found. And that's the shit that draws me in. I want to see the effing world I'm supposed to bring to life. The five worst things in Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition. So those are the big five praiseworthy things in D&D 5e, but you don't go to a guy with angry in his name because you're looking for positivity. You're here to listen to me slag on crap you don't like to feed your sense of smug superiority. So here are the five worst things about D&D 5e. Like that fat guy on every plane who buys two seats, advantage and disadvantage. Now, you ain't crazy, don't scroll up. Holy shit, I just realized that that fat guy on every plane who buys two seats is a double-layered joke, and I only meant one layer. Wow. Okay, that's amazing. Like that fat guy on every plane who buys two seats, advantage and disadvantage. Now, you ain't crazy, don't scroll up. I absolutely did say that advantage and disadvantage were, collectively, one of the best elements of D&D 5e's design. The advantage-disadvantage thing is elegant and it's got a great table feel. It's a really good design. And I effing hate it. And no, I don't hate it because it's so good. I hate it because it's bad for D&D. I can imagine a lot of board games and RPGs that would benefit from the advantage-disadvantage mechanic, but D&D ain't one of them. The problem's that it crowds out all the other modifiers. How? Well, first, you either have advantage or disadvantage, or you don't. Once you have either, you can't gain more. Second, because advantage and disadvantage feel so damned impactful, for the reasons described above, every other bonus or penalty feels bland by comparison. Sure, there's a bunch of bonus dice effect, fighter expertise, and the bonus from the bless spell and shit like that, but you can only have so many of those before you bog down the game with fistfuls of dice and extra math time for every roll. And bonus dice just don't feel the same. Why does this shit matter? It matters because in the open-ended action resolution system that is the D20 core mechanic, modifiers are the only clear, explicit, visible tools available to GMs for doling out situational bonuses and penalties. The die roll is fixed, and altering DCs just isn't something players really register. And situational modifiers are vital to engagement. See, situational modifiers are the way, yeah, I should emphasize that. Hold on, click. See, situational modifiers are the way you, the GM, reward players for treating the world like an actual effing world instead of a game construct. When a player pays attention to what an NPC says, notes his fierce loyalty to his clan, and then appeals to that clan loyalty to persuade the NPC to do a thing, the player's playing the game the best way. And that way of playing should be rewarded the most, because that way of playing is what makes RPGs unique among tabletop gaming experiences. Advantage and disadvantage are so effing overbearing and so effing ubiquitous in the mechanics that I've got nothing to offer the players when they go beyond the rules and treat the world like a world. I love the advantage-disadvantage I love advantage-disadvantage as an example of a clever game design solution to a problem, but I hate it in D&D. And it could have been amazing. Imagine how different the game would be if advantage and disadvantage were things only the GM could hand out, and if he only gave it out for treating the world like a world. Imagine if the game's mechanics only ever granted numerical bonuses or bonus dice. And while I'm dreaming, I'd also like a pony. You gotta unbind something. You gotta unbind something. HP and damage as level expressions. Let's go back to that bounded accuracy thing. Remember that? The 5e devs said they wanted to rein in numerical bloat in the core mechanic, keep ability check modifiers and DCs down to reasonable, easy-to-math numbers. And that's fair enough. Number bloat was a big thing in 3e and 4e, and it tended to crowd out the randomness of the d20 at mid to high levels. Fine. But now, let's talk about the unintended consequences of that call, and the intended ones. See, the devs needed a way to differentiate low-level PCs and monsters from high-level ones. In the stats, I mean. If they kept attack modifiers and armor classes on a modest scale, they needed a way to make a 15th level fighter better in combat than a first level fighter, and a way to make a stone giant a better threat than an orc. And they decided to use a damage progression. This ain't conjecture, by the way. The 5e devs explained all this shit publicly 8 years ago when they shat 5e onto store shelves. Anyway, that's why every class gets periodic damage increases. At-will spells have scaling damages, fighters get bonus attacks, rogues get bigger sneak attack dice, and so on. Yeah, D&D always did this shit to some extent. But 5e amped it up to 11 and made sure it was everywhere. The problem is that this really Fs with monster design. Consider the sheer number of monsters Consider the sheer number of monsters that need multi-attack just to get their damage up. Consider the sheer number of monsters that need multi-attack just to get their damage up. And look at the HP numbers. Not at high levels. High-level HP bloat is as much a D&D tradition as fighting over whether you can drink potions underwater. But the bloat starts at pretty low levels in 5e. If you're like me and you enjoy building your own custom beasties, because it ain't like you can just customize the ones in the monster manuals, see above in last week. If you like making your own monsters, you know what an absolute pain in the ass it is to find ways to get those damage numbers up. And going from hit points to hit dice leads to ridiculous results you just have to accept. Did I put six things here? Hold on. One. Two. Okay, no. Okay. I suddenly thought I had six worse things. Not counting the art. Because the art doesn't count. It's my dishonorable mention. Okay. Hemophiliac Aragorn with brittle bone disease. Superheroic low-level PCs. You had to know this was coming after I praised D&D 3E for its humble low levels. And I think that line about playing a full-powered Aragorn with hemophilia and osteogenesis imperfecta really nailed it. So much so, I'm not sure what to add. I shouldn't say that, because... It is, because I'm still kind of uncertain in the next paragraph. I realized I said, I don't even know what to add, and then I went on for three more paragraphs, but the next paragraph is me being vague and trying to figure it out. So there is a logical flow there from, I don't know what to add. This is what I'll add. That works. Okay. And I think that line about playing a full-powered Aragorn with hemophilia and osteogenesis imperfecta really nailed it. So much so, I'm not sure what to add. But this ain't as simple as saying D&D 5e's PCs are overpowered. Look, I do think 5e PCs at every level just have too many amazingly powerful mechanical tricks. And I think the lack of flaws, drawbacks, constraints, limitations, penalties, and trade-offs in character generation feeds into this shit. But really, I think there's just something really off in D&D 5e's game balance, and I can't figure out what the hell it is. See, I'm not saying that the game's too easy or too hard. I think low-level 5e characters are delicate and easy to break, and I like that. But again, hemophiliac Aragorn nails it perfectly. Low-level play is all about improbably awesome badasses who are one lucky hit from disaster. High-level play is all about improbably awesome badasses punching way below their weight class. Like Superman fighting purse snatchers and truant teenagers. Now, I don't want to run a fantasy game about improbably awesome badasses. That's why I have games like Champions and Mutants and Masterminds, which I don't run. That said, if D&D wants to be about improbably awesome badasses, I'm fine with that. I'll just play something else. It just feels like D&D doesn't actually want to be about improbably awesome badasses. Like, it doesn't know how to handle them. Yeah, this is vague, wishy-washy feelings, but at least it's more thought out than that bullshit I said about the art style. We left the world blank so you can make your own. There's no D&D world left. If you thought the last thing was wishy-washy feelings bullshit, you're gonna love this one. I miss the world of Dungeons & Dragons. For all the claims that D&D is a generic fantasy game, it nonetheless always managed to pull me into its particular flavor of fantasy adventure. This ain't just about the default setting, but about all the shit that unifies all but the weirdest of settings into one game. One cosmos. At times, D&D 5e offers glimpses of the world of Dungeons & Dragons, but they're inconsistent and uneven, and there's not much to see. Races and classes get lots of background lore and fluffy flavor bullshit, but the authors keep tripping over themselves, especially in the core books, to reassure you that everything that's ever existed in any flavor of D&D is totally cool, as is anything else you can imagine. Everything the books give you, they take away in the next paragraph with phrases like, but in the world of Kryn, elves are different, or not all paladins are religious, or whatever. The DMG pulls the same shit with the entire cosmos. And when this shit was revealed 8 years ago, I laughed my ass off because I thought the designers were effing with me. Then I realized they were serious. See, in 4e, the designers streamlined the entire multiplanar cosmos of D&D into a really tightly designed multiverse that had everything D&D needed from its multiverse in a very elegant package. What did they do with 5e? They took that streamlined cosmos and crammed everything in it into the bloated, messy nightmare of a multiverse of editions past. Talk about missing the effing point. I also can't figure out why the mother-loving F planar cosmology is so central to GMing that it fills the second chapter of the Dungeon Master's Guide while actually running the effing game is covered in chapter 8. But what do I know? Then, too, there are vast wadges of D&D's world that are just crammed into spreadsheets and glossaries, or not mentioned at all. A third of the game's playable core classes are divine spellcasters. I think the actual gods of the world deserve more than three different spreadsheets listing every god that's ever existed in any version of D&D. Most of the shit D&D 5e spills ink on is character crap. Because 5e is about building and portraying characters. D&D 5e is about playing Dungeons & Dragons. And as I said, it drops the ball there with its inconsistent presentation, its give-and-take text, and no continuity between its elements. I mean, if racial cultures are as described in the PHB, why do all members of every race pick from the same list of backgrounds that are totally based on human historical society? And if the game spent a little time talking about the nature of the gods, you wouldn't have mouth breathers spouting nonsense like, well, warlocks and clerics are basically the same, it's just the details of their contracts that are different. The point is, D&D basically says, F the world's not important. The world is just a backdrop against which your character does awesome things. Which is probably why the artwork is so heavily focused on the game's characters. The generic, bland, your face here characters. Just shut up and run the game. No support for homebrewing. Damn it, I wanted this to be a fun activity. And to show people what it looked like to find the good in what you don't like and the bad in what you do. And I think I did so. But I'm ending this whole thing on a really sour note. And I can't help that. The truth is this. You can be as even-handed in your analysis as you want. It won't make you like the things you don't like. No amount of logical reason can do that. It ain't how emotions work. And liking shit is an emotional response. At best, the analysis just helps you find value in your bad experiences. It helps you remain unbiased in your designs, and it makes you less of a shrieking internet asshole. As evidenced by the fact that I'm not a shrieking internet asshole at all. I left that joke unsaid in the text. These last three worsts. The weird imbalance between the characters and the world they inhabit, the lack of a consistent world to engage me as a GM and a creator, and the vague but undeniable feeling that D&D 5e doesn't really want me making my own content, those three elements are precisely why I don't like running 5e. I'm a homebrewer, and I'm at my best presenting consistent, emotionally engaging worlds that suck my players in. And D&D 5e's got no meat for me. Oh, sure, it'll let me create shit, but it ain't gonna help me, and it's gonna sit there scowling at me the entire time. Fine, make your own world, and I'll just sit over here with the latest nostalgia marketing crap remake of an old adventure that was already perfectly fine that you could run instead. D&D 5e isn't made to tinker with. It ain't made to homebrew. I know people disagree with me. I know they say stupid crap like, the lack of mechanical rigor makes it easy to hack 5e, and the lack of established world lore makes it easy to scratch make your own world. Those people are morons. I don't want to hack a system or build everything from scratch. I paid hundreds of dollars for this game system. I shouldn't have to recode the entire effing thing just to make anything more interesting than a dungeon crawl. And I don't want to have to fit the weird, inconsistent foibles of every possible incarnation of every race and class and background into a world I made my own. I want a homebrew. I want tools, and I want a tweak. I mean, if I have to rewrite everything to tell my own story, why is it okay for players to tell their stories, but not me? If I have to rewrite everything to tell my own story, I might as well just make my own role-playing game and run that. Now that's an idea.